Welcome to Wheel to Wheel, the premier Formula One podcast by two soon-to-be star-crossed podcasters on different coasts who know medium to nothing about Formula One.
The Baku Grand Prix brought us porpoising to the next level, tested reliability for Ferrari-powered engines, and proved once again Red Bull are the ones to beat. I'm Zaylee.
And I'm Maya.
Lights out and away we go.
First of all, I feel like this is a momentous occasion. This is a really special day for so many reasons. Do you want to say it or do you want me to say it?
I mean, I already announced
you
it.
Did.
You can say it again.
Just Zaylee Mahone is going to be... Wait, did I air you out?
Yeah, we never say our last names
we
here.
We should bleep that.
I don't mind. Okay. I think it's kind of weird that we don't say our full names.
I feel like I love to be known by my first and last name, actually. I'm not like a mononym kind of girl.
Yeah.
So, but I don't
know. I'm Zaylee Mahone, everybody.
Woo!
Now you know I'm out and I'm proud. I'm Zaylee Mahone.
Happy Zaylee Mahone Day. Happy Zaylee Mahone coming out of Zaylee Mahone Day.
You'll come out next week. We'll expose your last
name. Okay. No, you guys can all guess what it is.
Unless our stalkers find you by finding
which
me
Which I'm
first.
Sure they probably can.
Yeah.
I trust you guys are smart enough. Okay, so Zaylee is going to be moving to Los Angeles to pursue a career in media? In podcasting?
Yeah, a career in media and podcasting.
And world domination.
Yep. I work for a production company that is really cool. I'm just going to toot my own horn. I'm working for a production company. I love my job.
Yeah.
It is amazing. And I'm really excited for what's to come in LA. But this week, I have to admit, I've been really sad. I've been tearing up. I get off the phone with people and I cry. I'm just like, this is a huge fucking deal.
It is. And it's so... Yeah, Zaylee is like the first of my, I feel like, closest friends to move that far. And I feel like it's just, it's very brave. It's really brave. And I guess you guys should write so many nice comments to Zaylee because she's going to be going on her own little adventure. And it's going to be so cool. But we'll still keep doing the podcast. So never you worry.
Yeah.
It'll keep coming out. We just won't be in the flesh anymore.
There was nary a doubt that this
nary.
Would not continue. Like,
if
this
you
has
thought
to-
we were going to stop, you thought wrong. Okay. I also would like to talk about something kind of serious.
So last week, if anyone like listens to our podcast every week, you would know that last week we didn't have an episode, or perhaps you were able to download it before the episode was taken down. But Wheel to Wheel ran into our first
PR.
Yeah, PR. What is it called? A PR blunder? A hiccup?
A blunder. It was a hiccup.
We had to apologize.
We did have to apologize. So for those of you who don't know, our last... Okay, I'm trying to be very transparent. So like, I'm trying to decide what I'm going to say and how honest it is to how I actually feel, to be quite honest.
Maya.
What?
Just be honest.
No, that is me being honest. I'm being honestly saying I'm not sure how to feel about it.
I could tell that this affected you. You were like, how do you feel about this? I was like, I don't feel a way.
I felt a kind of way.
She was feeling a way.
Our last episode, we read fan fiction.
Fan fiction that is publicly available and free online.
Yep.
And the next day we woke up to DMs.
Tweets,
comments.
Messages.
Everyone was incensed by what we had done.
Yeah. So the complaints sort of came in two parts, right? The first and most immediate set of complaints were like, okay, did you ask author's permission? That was
right.
Like, everyone's like, excuse me, did you ask?
Yeah.
And we didn't. And that I totally understand, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think I was super approaching it from this. We made sure to credit everybody. And I thought that would be a good thing. Turns out that is not good.
In the DMs in Instagram, people were like, you are taking the fan fiction out of the context where it exists in and exposing the fan fiction to people
who don't understand
the fan fiction world, and therefore opening up these online creators to bullying and therefore
suicidal ideation.
Which
is a lot.
Maya's not that sympathetic to it.
And here's why. Here's another thing they also said. They were like, you don't know why people write and do these things. Like, people do this as an escape. And I just feel like that is a lot. I think yes. And I also think so do people do a lot of other things for those reasons. Mm-hmm. And we still sort of interact with and critique and engage with other people's art, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, we're doing this for an escape.
We're doing this for an escape.
We've never been to a race before, and we escape through F1, I'm sure.
Right. And I also think to put
suicide on our hands is a lot for episode that we read publicly available information that already exists.
And this is maybe something I'm sticking on. Did we laugh at things? Yes, we did. And
Maya feels like we treated the work with the utmost respect.
I
and
don't feel like it was the utmost. I do feel like it wasn't like this it is was a fair. Joke.
Right. We didn't make fun of the people who made it.
Nope.
By the way, I never said that in high school, my friend and I had a fan fiction book.
Yeah.
It had over 500,000 reads. Like, maybe we should have said that we are a part of the fan fiction community, but yeah. I don't think I would have minded if someone read my fan fiction. I think we had an overzealous fan fiction writer find our account.
Yeah.
And projected. He kind of shared what he might be feeling. Why he might be going through fan fiction. Right. And what he might feel if somebody had read his work or shared his work. I don't even know if it was a he, just was really projecting why they did fan fiction, how they would feel if someone read their work. I don't think everyone feels like the way they do.
I don't think everyone feels the way they do. Mm-hmm. The way that person does. I also think that there's an element to this that it feels like it's undergirding this entire conversation. That's like, I guess this is like a community. Like, this mm-hmm. is something I really didn't know had like a culture or mm-hmm. like rules. Mm-hmm. And like, they're like, you never talk. It's kind of like this thing. It kind of felt like it was supposed to be under wraps. Like, mm-hmm. I just didn't know that there's.
You have to read it in secret.
Yes. I didn't know you had to read it in secret.
But I was saying to Maya that I feel like part of it is that we are extremely open about sexuality. It doesn't feel weird to us, I think, to read erotica, talk about erotica. We were reading 50 Shades when we were like 10 years old. Not 13.
Were curious minds.
Right. And I just think, and we were open about things like, you know, coitus and, you know,
fellatio,
pleasing yourself.
Sure.
And it doesn't make us feel guilty. But I think some people are writing fan fiction, you know, in very secret, dark.
That's what it's giving.
Things corners. That should never be found and should never be explored. And so, I mean, cultures collide.
And I think that is what I'm taking away from this entire conversation, is that the fanfic community is a community with its own norms and rules. And like, when we made this podcast, people were like, well, here they go, another podcast. I'm like, right. So this is something y'all face like a lot.
They face this as a community.
I had no idea. So that I will say, I'm sorry.
We apologize, and we did apologize, and we took the episode down.
So, do you want to talk headlines?
Yeah, what are your headlines? What do you got, girl?
Should I start?
Yeah.
Let me get this guy's name right, so just give me 1 second.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I get it right. Okay, so you know the new FIA has, a new president, Mohamed Ben Sulayem. Did you know that? So he came out with comments, I feel like a few days ago, that was basically in response to Sebastian Vettel talking about queerness. Did you see this? Was this one of his headlines?
No, it's not one of my headlines, but I heard about this.
You know, Sebastian Vettel, ever the ally, was like, we definitely need a gay F1 driver. And, you know, he's very pro for, you know, all causes.
Yeah.
This guy, Sulayem, was like, I wouldn't really push my views too much on like on our community. Like, he's like, I think we have a really diverse group, and what other corporation can say they have like 15 nationalities represented? Whatever. I thought that was an interesting comment. 2 days later, the FIA announced an appointment of an equality, diversity, and inclusion advisor, which, I mean, obviously that would have to have been in the works for a while. I just think like a funny thing for him to be like, this is actually not that important. And then 2 days later, they're like, actually.
I think you're being way too kind to that guy. You're softening his remarks. He said something much worse, didn't he? I'm too nice.
Okay, I'm not actually trying to be too nice. I'm trying to focus on the positive of the news, which is that we have a new FIA equality person. But I'm like, what on earth are they going to do?
No, nothing.
Nothing.
And I think that these appointments are
very
irritating,
chess pieces,
empty. Yeah. Either way, the most ridiculous part of this is that he's part of the FIA.
That's what I'm saying.
He's like, not even a part of F1. Like, the FIA polices so many different auto sports. Yeah. And just, I don't see why. Would you ever hear a referee saying anything close
no.
to and getting into this?
That was another thing that I was thinking about within this conversation is like, what are the cultural values feels like it's giving it too much credit, but like, what is the vibe of what's going on in the FIA compared to what's going on in F1? And like, how interconnected are these two things? It reminds me of like the discussion around stewardship and Michael Massey and like how one person's decision can be at total odds with like what everybody else is going through in the car and whatever is happening.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit like all over the place.
I know. And this is the thing that is ghetto about business and just working with people that are just hired from everywhere and every which way. I don't even think that he is an accurate representation. Like, I hope not. That the FIA governing body has a spirit, or like whoever it is just random people getting hired and fired.
There's no soul. It's just like a nerve.
Yeah,
it's just nerfed.
It's
cells.
Right. And that's what the paddock gives too. Like, it's all over the place. People have all kinds
of business.
The drivers who knelt shocked me. The drivers who have weird political leanings shocked me. Oh, talking about surprise.
What?
Nico, my man's Nico, is not allowed has been banned from
that
the F1 paddock
so funny.
For not being vaccinated.
First of all.
He hasn't been vaccinated this whole time.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, how is he even on the paddock? Like, this is, why is this just now coming to light?
And that's the thing. I feel like it came to a head because somebody
he
was
coughed
like,
on somebody and they were like, this is the last straw.
Right. I feel like somebody was like, you know what? I'm tired of this. They've probably been asking him to get vaccinated for mad long.
Yeah.
And he was saying no and delaying it and doing whatever, hemming and hawing. And eventually they were just like, you know what? No.
Maybe they got tired of his commentary and were like, this is actually a great reason to kick you out because you're not
vaccinated. No, his commentary is amazing. No one could get tired of it. That man is hilarious. That man is hilarious. I'm not going to watch his YouTube channel, but.
No, his big ass head. Oh my God.
I love it. He's hilarious. He hate you. It's so clear who he doesn't like and likes.
I know.
And
I'm not, it's not the most incisive thing I've ever heard. I was also going to say that from work, I feel like my sense was that the paddock was actually pretty vaccinated. So I guess he just slipped by. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you have the right connections.
Dang, bro.
But also, I don't think they're checking everybody's vaccination status. Like, I can imagine that a guest commentator might not have to show their vaccine card.
It's slippery. By the way, Zaylee texted me this news and was like, you're going to hate this. And I was like, you're so right. I hate it.
Because Maya hates anti-vaxxers.
I don't like anti-vaxxers. Yeah, you're so right.
She does not like them.
What else do you have news-wise?
I also have a rumor that Gasly might end up at McLaren.
What? That must be a deep cut. What? And Daniel Ricciardo's out?
Yeah.
Wow, that's so weird. I actually read somewhere that Pierre Gasly was like kind of disappointed that Checo got his contract renegotiated because he wanted that seat, but I was like,
what are they going to do with this man?
I don't know.
It's so interesting because Pierre Gasly, I think, is one of the most talented drivers in a midfield team.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You said deep cut unrelated to this, but deep cut Pierre Gasly, I feel like he never gets his shine.
Yeah.
And it's so weird to be under the thumb of Helmut Marko and all of his minions and Red Bull and the Red Bull machine. And he got his chance at Red Bull. He was clearly not given the time that he deserved to grow into that team. And he was put under a lot of pressure. Not everyone does well under that pressure. But Christian has basically vowed to never hire him again.
Why?
And he's in the...
Because he folded in the seat the first time?
Right. And they're just like, we're not gonna make that same mistake twice. They basically believe that if you can't take the pressure, you'll never be able to take the pressure. It's an interesting cutthroat way of going about running a team.
Yes.
I get it. But I think Gasly deserves a chance. And if I were Gasly, I would be looking elsewhere, which is probably what he's doing.
I get it. And I also think that kind of mentality doesn't really allow for you to like find the next big driver, right? Like, it kind of feels like there are times in which I feel like drivers obviously come out strong, they start strong, they stay strong, whatever. But I feel like that's, if you look at anybody's career, there's going to be moments where there's like little lulls and blips and times when like they weren't doing their best, but like they still ended up somewhere. And I do, we've talked about this so many times, but like Red Bull does not have an attitude towards like mentorship or growth or like getting better. It's very much about like what your performance is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And then you're right. It's like, I get it. It's just a different attitude.
But I love the idea of McLaren for him because McLaren is a team that's growing and it's on its way.
And you
up
can
the
see
paddock.
It grow.
Right.
We're going to talk about this. We'll talk about this when it comes to this.
Okay.
But I have thoughts. here's another piece of news that if you follow us on TikTok, you may have seen it referenced.
What?
But Mexican Formula One driver Sergio Perez.
I was so excited.
It's not good.
It's not good.
Has apologized to his wife for a very, very unflattering video that came out after his Monaco win.
He did the Tristan Thompson.
Oh, violation.
He was caught with a woman while his wife was literally, she had had a baby.
She had
like
a baby,
before.
She literally just had a baby.
Yeah.
More to the point that I don't know that I could marry an F1 driver. Not that that's any consolation.
A cheater is going to cheat, whether he's in Formula One or not. He's a cheater.
These athletes, but anybody at the same
right,
point.
And I feel like some athletes would never cheat.
But back to Checo, he says, I've seen the videos that have been circulating about me, and I take responsibility for it.
Yeah, which isn't even that full-throated of an apology.
It's not. And I also wonder what the PR vibe is like for F1 teams. Like, what would make somebody get kicked off an F1 team? Being Russian? Like Nikita Mazepin.
Right, it has to do with, like, the politics
but
of
like
the
world. Something like this, athletes obviously don't care, or, like, this sport wouldn't care. But I'm just curious, like, what could you do that people would be like, whoop?
It's interesting because if it was Vettel, I wouldn't be surprised if it were Vettel in this position.
Ooh.
And just that's the vibe I'm getting.
Go ahead.
But if it were Vettel, I feel like it would be a really long apology, especially considering, like, you know what I mean? It would be just more soulful of an apology. How connected do you think he is to his family? I never see his family in the paddock.
I have no idea. I was going to say connected do you think he felt to like what he did? Because I was like, he was blacked out probably.
Oh.
Like
well,
for Monaco.
We saw a video of him like basically falling off of a yacht. He was blacked out. It was crazy.
I don't know how connected he is to his family. I don't.
This is, to me, it would almost depress me. It would be a big deal.
If you were Checo.
Even if I was a cheater man, if I was exposed, if I was really connected to my wife and to my family who just had a baby 2 weeks ago.
I would be so embarrassed. I would just be embarrassed.
It hasn't even come up and I haven't even seen any journalists.
Well, was he supposed to talk about it on the paddock? Like,
yes.
You think so?
I'm shocked that no journalist brought it up. I guess that's because we're American. But the first thing I would be saying, I would put a mic in his face and be like, I'm trying to think about the question I would craft, but it has to come up. I'm sorry.
No, you think Tristan Thompson is being asked about, was he asked about cheating by like, people on the, I was going to say the sports field, whatever, in the basketball court? No.
But I mean, like, Shaq, for example, was just speaking about his divorce. He's not even playing basketball anymore, and they were asking him about his divorce, and he was kind of apologizing to someone who already divorced. I'm just, okay, fine. Maybe
you're like,
I
don't
ask.
Want a separation of church and state. I want to see it get a little interesting. They should have to answer to their crimes.
A lot of people, he has a lot of fans, and he has a sweet fan base, and people really care about him, and people love Checo, and I'm just like, is he not going to give people
more?
The chance? Is he not going to give people more? Maybe it's like what we've projected onto him, but I just see him as a different personality.
To be fair, you know. I kind of feel like if I were in his position or if I were famous, I might be like, I don't know how much I have to explain to the public. Like, you know, it's like what do you owe these people? Obviously, they're your fans and they love you and support you. But I'm just like, this is kind of a personal matter. I don't know.
Okay, fine. It's a personal matter, but I'm rolling my eyes. If I'm a driver and I'm at the driver parade, I'm rolling
you
my
like,
eyes
I
at
saw
him.
What you
I'm
did
like,
last weekend.
Yeah. Like, get away
me
from
too,
Checo.
Me too. Like, I get it.
He got on my nerves.
He's irritating
for that.
Any other news bits you have?
Yeah.
What do you got?
Mercedes is campaigning for the FIA to completely change regulations to help with porpoising.
That, I wanted to have a big section about porpoising. There's so much to say about the freaking porpoising this race.
But where do you fall morally on that? Do you think that even that ask is unfair?
Hold on.
Yeah, I know, because you're going to try to do some mental gymnastics. This girl freaking loves Mercedes. And Maya is extremely opinionated. And if she likes something, she's going to figure out a way to explain
no,
why.
No, I don't think it's why.
She's going to be doing backflips.
You go first, bro. You think that it's
not fair.
Why do you say that? I feel like a lot of teams, but a lot, not just Mercedes, are struggling with it.
Right, but there is a solution, and the solution
is to
go
lower
slower.
Lower the car.
The solution is to go slower. The solution is to go slower, and they have a solution for it.
Yeah.
And the solution is to admit that they didn't develop the car well enough. And you know what? It's a consequence of the fact that people don't talk about this a lot, but basically in the last season, different teams were allotted different amounts of time in the wind tunnels. Like, okay. The FIA basically rationed out wind tunnel time. And I think to bring the field closer together, they didn't do it to some of the top teams like Mercedes, and basically like worked toward trying to just give other people different advantages.
Uh-huh.
And I think Mercedes, you know, that was to Mercedes' detriment because they weren't able to really see how the car like worked. But this quote-unquote ground effect, I've heard, it was not a surprise, isn't a surprise
to
in
other
a ground
teams.
Effect car. No, just in general. Like, in motorsport, it's a known
phenomenon
that people were expecting this year. They weren't expecting it to this degree, but clearly some teams, like Red Bull, got it together and were able to create a car. And it's so weird because I really, really love Mercedes, but I don't think that... I think there is a solution.
And the solution is, I mean, that's what they're talking about, right? Like, it depends on how lowering the floor, right? That's what they're talking about that can affect the porpoising. Okay, so here's my initial answer. I was going to say that I don't think that it's bad for them to ask the FIA to intervene or to, like, make some kind of standardization that would help porpoising, because I think if everybody gets that, whatever that thing is that's going to help the porpoising effect, I feel like everyone is going to have the same advantage. Do you know what I mean? Like, Red Bull's...
No, because the people who, like, mentally worked out the problem and whatever sacrifices they made on that car
in order to make it work,
and then developed the car in that direction, like, with those limitations, then made it go fast. Mercedes is basically, like, throwing a tantrum. They did this no side pod design, yeah, and have done all this. They look different anyway, and whatever they're doing... Like, just admit you made a slower car. I think it's hard for them to, like, even face that.
I think it's interesting to see. There's so many points to this. It's really interesting to see which drivers are complaining about this and which drivers are not. So, like, Fernando Alonso was like, I think it's fun. Like, I'm having a great time. Like,
Fernando Alonso is one of the only drivers who's not on board, by the way. I heard a rumor that all the other drivers are kind of, like, fine with helping porpoising, and he's not.
He's not, because anyway with him. Lando Norris was like, I think people shouldn't bitch and moan about it. Carlos Sainz said the same thing. Did you see what Pierre said about walking with a cane by 30? He's like, if you don't want our drivers to walk with canes by 30, then we need to fix this porpoising problem. But I also was going to say that somebody who was pro Mercedes on my Twitter feed, which is...
Right, because her algorithm
overall pro Mercedes Twitter feed was talking about how in like 2018 or 2017, Christian Horner was like, something needs to be done in reference to Mercedes because they're just dominating the competition. It's not fair the way that they're able to advance in the competition. The way that they're able to advance in the car and in the competition is just like, no one is ever going to have a chance to win. And I just feel like that was an interest, like that's just a comparison or like a parallel to like,
what's happening here, but that's not happening here because Mercedes was 14 seconds out. It would be pew pew, and then
and it
30 seconds,
yeah,
and then the rest of the field was coming. This is like a solvable, like we're seeing on track. It's like almost split 6 and 6. How many teams are there? Like 5 and 5, I feel, yeah, like are almost down the middle, struggling with porpoising versus not. And it feels like a technical solution, a technical problem to have.
That people have, that right, they can fix and they have within their arsenal to fix it, the right tools in their arsenal.
I feel like the playing ground is pretty fair.
It's interesting because I was also thinking about this on the way here when I was like, what responsibility does the FIA have towards like something like the driver's health, right? And like, because there's just so many moving parts and so many variables when it comes to like what the driver's experiencing in the car. So... it is interesting for them to like wave a flag and be like, FIA, can you help us? When like a lot of like what's happening in the car is the responsibility of the people who make the car and mm-hmm. of the team. This is something that I feel like is affecting my overall like perception of the sport or just like my level of enjoyment with the sport. It kind of feels like this season, let me see. I pulled up some numbers. So give me a second because okay. I got some numbers for you, which is not that much numbers, but I did some calculations.
Uh-huh.
But at the end of this race, we had 4 DNFs.
Uh-huh.
Last season, overall, there were, no, last season within the first 8 races, there were 16 DNFs. Mm-hmm. This season, there have been 30 DNFs so far. Mm-hmm. So we have like twice the amount of people who are not finishing. Mm-hmm. We have this porpoising issue and everything that's happening here. I kind of feel like, and then we have like this battle right at the front of the grid between Leclerc and Verstappen, but half the fucking time, one or two of those teams are not even finishing the race. Mm-hmm. So it just feels like there's so much like extra stuff around the racing happening that I'm struggling to enjoy it as much as I did last season. Cause it feels like the competition is like all over the place. These cars are not even getting from point A to point B.
Yeah.
That's just something that I've been thinking about.
In order to finish first, you have to finish the race. That's what they say.
Right. So that's why I'm a little bit like, when it's like, oh, Red Bull's unstoppable. It's like, yeah, this season I'm like, yeah, I guess. But it's kind of like, we just haven't even been seeing these people, these drivers really competing at the top of their ability like they were doing last year.
I disagree with you.
Go ahead.
I like this season so much more than I did last season. Last season was extremely contentious and extremely emotional for me. And I like seeing whether Red Bull is going to fix the DRS. And this is now the second race where they literally can't get the DRS, which is actually such a simple lever and one of the simplest parts of the car.
So simple, you can duct tape it.
So simple, in fact, that you can put duct tape on it and go back out in the middle of the race and they haven't figured it out. That is like so titillating to me. And I also love I like rules and I like seeing how people bend the rules. We talked about in the primer episode about how you're not playing the sport, you're playing the rules. Mm-hmm. And I love that this season has been about this porpoising. I'm curious to see who's going to win this battle. Who's got the biggest balls? Like, who is going to be able to... Does Lewis have an impact because he pretends that he can't get out of a car and is boo-hooing and talking about my back is killing me? Like, I just like this season.
As I'm hearing you talk about it, it's like so much of these things are like happening out... Not off the track, but like there's a lot of politics to it. Mm-hmm. I think last season was also very political, but it felt so much more connected to like
the driving
and like what was happening on the race, on the track. I think this season, you're right that there's like so,
there's so
funny
because
I guess
on.
Like the cars just aren't that fucking good. So there's like,
no. And I was going to say,
jewelry and this and that.
We had this discussion before, but don't lose hope. Don't lose hope for
I'm
this season.
I'm not going to lose hope. I'm okay, not good. Losing hope overall. I'm just telling you that, like, when I watch a race and I see that 17 cars don't finish.
I love it. Like, we're so different. When those two Ferraris went out, I was like,
that
now
got
we're
me
talking.
So excited, bro. I was like, no.
And I love thinking about which cars are connected. I'm like, all right, so Ferrari's going out. Who else going out? Alfa Romeo?
Alfa Romeo?
Who's left? I'm literally like, okay, Zhao? Boom, boom, boom.
Zhao?
When as soon as Yuki Tsunoda's DRS broke, I was like, who else? Who's next? Who's next? Go, go, go.
It's very messy. It feels overall much messier than last season. Last season was actually messy, but in a different way. This feels messier.
I feel like it's messy in that we don't know where to look.
That's what I'm saying. That's a great way of putting it. What should we be paying attention to? What's important? And also, yeah, I think the rules for like what makes a competitive car are less clear this season. Because you're right. Like, we saw Alpine had like really great straight line speed. It's like, okay, that's a team that's like, you ain't really seeing them in first and second, but like you see them battling with the Mercedes. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's like a Rubik's Cube. It's kind of like, oh, I didn't know those two colors could go next to each other.
It reminds me of, oh, you didn't see this, but it just reminds me of the first season of Game of Thrones, where you know that the storylines are somehow connected, but you're watching the characters when they're, some of the people who are going to end up being so huge in the show are 5. Like, the childhood actors, they're 5. And you're like, how is this going to relate? And you've got, like, people in different cities. And then by season 3, it's, like, building to this orchestra.
I think
I don't mind the feeling of, like, whiplash and of just not knowing where to look and not knowing who's important yet. I see Zhao was having a good race before he crashed out. And I'm like, Zhao is someone who we didn't even know him last year. Yeah. I'm like, where is he going to be in season 3? Like, where's Zhao going to be?
Is he going to be king of the Northlands?
Literally, is he going to, like, advance up to Botox status and then do a pull a. I don't know. It's just.
I cool. think it's so interesting too, because I think you're thinking in like three, not in three seasons, but like I'm very much like, what is happening yeah. in this season and mm-hmm. what is happening in this race and how enjoyable is that on a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
So much simpler. But I think this conversation to the listeners is interesting because we are coming at it from two, you know, different perspectives yeah. on like what makes the sport interesting and cool.
No, certainly.
Yeah. And maybe you guys have a third perspective or a fourth. Did you see in the cool down room the thing that was like no cursing? Did you see that?
They had like they're not talking in the cool down room anymore. I'm like, bro, talk.
Bro, it was so awkward watching Sergio and George sit there in silence.
I was weak, bro. I was like, are they gonna interact? Or are they just gonna vibe?
I don't think they know each other.
I was gonna say, I was like, is this like a little beef, or is it just that you guys don't interact?
I don't think they know each other.
I also think that the young people in the sport are extremely exclusive.
Oh, that's interesting.
It kind of comes off as rude, but I actually think he's too insecure just to know awkward. What to say. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think it was particularly rude. I was just like, this is weird.
I was annoyed that like Checo had to say something first when he should be, when George is the baby and George should be like, I'm happy to be in this room with you and I'm third and you've been in this sport for so long and I don't know.
Yeah. Did you all see the Mortal Kombat opening to the race, by the way? I love that. Did you see it?
No, I don't even know what you're talking about. You're talking about Checo and
no,
the overtake?
It was no.
What the f*** is the Mortal Kombat
it was
opening?
Like it was like they did like a they put like drivers. I don't know who made this. I think maybe the F1 team like made this little like graphic or a little video graphic of like the drivers fighting as if in Mortal Kombat. It was funny. It was like Vettel versus Hamilton. They're like bing, bing, bing. You didn't see that?
I wouldn't even recognize it if I did because I don't even know what Mortal Kombat
would
even
look like. You never played Mortal Kombat?
I've never played a video game in my entire life.
All right.
I've never played a video game.
First thing I'm getting Zaylee when she moves to LA is a Mortal Kombat.
No, I genuinely think that we should buy F1 we should buy the F1 video game and live stream us playing it.
Bro, the way I would be screaming weak, like, I actually couldn't even describe to you. So we have the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. It is a street circuit. 51 laps, 3 sectors, 2 DRS zones, 20 turns. Mm-hmm. And the first corner is a really good corner for overtaking. It was really hot that day.
Yeah, really hot. And also, it's the Azerbaijani Grand Prix.
Azerbaijani, yeah.
It's only 51 laps. And I know it's a longer circuit, but the race seemed to go fairly quickly. Like, it felt like 51 laps.
Yeah, it did. And I think part of what I found interesting this race was like a lot of the tire strategy stuff, because you could tell who was kind of trying to decide between doing like a one stop, which wasn't advisable, but just because it was so hot and the tires were degrading. There was something like that around like McLaren and Daniel Ricciardo versus Lando, stuff like that. But yes.
Yeah, I mean, okay, let's not skip to this moment in the race immediately, but I just want to say that I feel like Ferrari pushed everybody onto a different tire strategy than mm-hmm. what they wanted to be on, because they took the opportunity to pit on that safety car.
On the safety car.
Mercedes did it too. I can't remember who else did it, but it kind of changed the shape
of
the race.
It was, because they pitted early. They pitted early.
Yeah, I think it was like, it was definitely before lap 15.
Yeah. And that was, it's so interesting because a decision like that, it has to happen so quickly.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh, like once you pit, like, you know, at lap whatever 7, let's say, it's going to change the entire rest of the race. So there's a lot of factors happening.
Yeah.
So let's start with lap 1. Charles gets off good on the line. So does Perez, but then Charles has a little lockup, so Perez is able to get ahead.
What I want to say about the way that the race started is that Max is not on pole. Perez is ahead of Max.
Yes.
And I just think that's interesting. And let that be said, people have spoken a lot about how this car is closer to Perez's strengths as a driver.
I've heard that.
And this car kind of plays on Max's weaknesses as a driver. And I am really curious about
what?
Max obviously won this race. Spoiler alert, Max won this race.
He did.
But I'm just really curious about how Red Bull feels about these two drivers coming together and coming closer together, and also Perez doing
further apart.
coming to closer together and coming further apart all at once. You were coming off of the fan fiction high. But what's going to happen when the next time that they do team orders, now that Perez has that's a big head?
He has a big head.
My man's literally won a race and went and cheated on his wife. Like,
that's winning, baby.
He has the ego the size of Azerbaijan.
And it is interesting, like, once he keeps inching up and getting more and more driver's points, it's like there may come a point in which he has more, that they're on equal levels, and then driver's orders may go out the window. Or, like, he might have more reason to be like, no, f*** you, I'm going to compete to win.
Right, and which Red would be Bull dope. Has to kind of answer to that. Right. Like, what exactly are they gonna ask them to switch when Perez is ahead of him in the
That's
standing?
That's crazy.
And people have also suggested that his contract might literally explicitly say that he is a number two driver.
What?
Yeah. Like, wow. That could be built into the contract. That could be built into his contract in theory. So also, is it?
No.
And is that going to be made clear to us this season? Are we going to see more obvious evidence of that? Or, you know, is it something that he knew when he signed on that he would always play that role? Because he's not Bottas, bro. He is nothing like Bottas.
No.
I will tell you that much.
I don't think that it was in his contract, or I would have a hard time believing that it was, just because.
Would you have a hard time believing that it wasn't a clear and explicit understanding?
Less so. I mean, like a tacit agreement, right? That it feels like culturally known within the team, like what's up? I feel like no, but I feel like that's probably the case with a lot of the top teams, right? Like, it's probably not in Bottas's contract, but they're like all new.
Red Bull does it different is all. That's, like, we know that for a Fizzact, so.
He has a little, on his desk, he has a number two driver plaque.
All right, so first moment of the race, Sergio puts a huge amount of power into his tires and goes out in front of Charles.
Yeah.
But we know, if you put too much power into your tires when you first go out and your tires aren't warmed up enough or aren't ready for that, you will never get back the same amount of performance that new tires have. Mm-hmm. So he was from the beginning.
It's interesting.
And they were double because after that first safety car and Ferrari pit and people started pitting, they didn't take that opportunity, which is usually something that Red Bull would do.
Yeah, I'm confused as to that pit strategy as well.
Yeah. I guess they thought it was too early, or maybe they thought there was going to be another safety car.
The betting on the imaginary safety cars is always an interesting gamble. And by the way, in the first lap, we have Latifi under investigation already.
Right.
Did you see that?
He didn't park in his space correctly.
I think his person, like, touched something, right? Like, after he was supposed to.
Yeah, because he rolled. He was too far ahead of this line, so they had to back him up into his space. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, they all get into position, and so the guy had to come out.
And then he had a 20-second penalty, or was it 10? 10. It's 10. But people were like, "That I think that's too tough. Like, that's too hard."
I don't mind that, because I feel like you really need to police and incentivize people against driving past that white line.
Yeah, and I think it's a safety issue as well.
Wait, what did you think of Mercedes double stacking the cars and then it kind of impacting Lewis and Lewis ending up behind? Who got in front of him? Vettel?
Yeah.
Just more Lewis versus George.
I was just going to say, it's more Lewis versus George. And actually with this, I feel a little bit more how, like, you feel towards Lewis, where it's like people are like, he just can't catch a break. And I'm like, it's fine to me.
George was ahead of him. I think this race, he got driver of the day, which was interesting.
That surprised the hell out of me.
But with 14% of the vote, which makes me think that everybody got, it was like
we're watching four different races.
What do you call that? Like when you win something out of plurality?
I don't know. And I don't know that term.
It just means, like, you don't really win a majority, but because there were, like, so many people in the running for it, the percentages are still, it's like 8, 7, 10.
That's probably why.
10,
each person got one little nugget of the thing.
He won with 14%. That means that nobody got over,
I
like,
I think he
10.
Did a really good job towards the end of the race of, I have it in my notes, but just, like, a fighting back up the paddock. I don't know where
he
ended up.
And
Let's
I also
see.
Think he did a good job of not blaming the team.
Yes.
He did say...
I agree with that. He ended up in fourth, which I think was really good.
Yeah. And I think he was aware that was a good drive, and so did shut the fuck up. But he did have is kidding me.
Bro.
He did say that. But he wasn't complaining as much as he usually does. And
Driver of the day! Yeah, I appreciated that.
Round of applause for Lewis. For not complaining as much as he usually does.
Also, why was Max having to be told to use the overtake button? Like, it's really interesting.
Dude, I don't know if they're playing Red Bull messages more, but I feel like Red Bull is so... like not mean to them, but just I'm just interested by that. They be dominating them. They be telling them what to do, and like
I kind of feel a sense. I've said this before, but like, and maybe it's even clearer after our previous conversation. But it feels a little bit like you can feel Max panicking a little bit in the car sometimes, where it's like he's like, "Why isn't this working? What's up?"
But they're also rude.
I didn't think this was that rude.
Not that.
Okay.
But did you remember a moment where he was like? He asks questions sometimes, and they're just like, "You don't need to worry about that." And I'm just like, "Okay, whoa. Well, I don't usually hear other teams getting on the radio talking about some.
You don't need to worry about that right now.
Like it's giving very
put
much
put the foot
like,
on the pedal and go. You worried about the wrong stuff.
Shut up and drive.
Okay, like, and this is actually a really good. This is a segue to my point before about Daniel and race strategy with Lando, mm-hmm. because I feel like in hearing. How the team is talking to them, it's really different. Like,
I was so shocked
to see how they negotiate and literally talk to their drivers. Mm-hmm. Like, when they were telling Lando, if you can, like, put the pressure on Daniel, then maybe we can let you go ahead. But Daniel's behind Alonso and all of these other things. And I was like, wow, this is kind of interesting because it does... I've seen mixed responses to that, but I feel like it does a little bit give every driver the opportunity to, like, go their best, to do their best a little bit. Is that too, like, kind of a POV?
I think it's a bit kind. It kind of reminds me of...
It's interesting.
I'm not supportive of the way Red Bull treats their drivers.
Agreed.
But, I don't know, I guess I just grew up being really judgmental of Caucasian parenting.
It feels like Caucasian parenting.
McLaren feels like Caucasian parenting. Like, I'm like negotiating.
They're giving these people options?
Right. You're slowing down your drivers by literally, like, just this back and forth is like, definitely you're losing
about?
Time.
Yeah.
And even, I'm like, who are you fooling with the, right now we're trying to overcut Fernando Alonso or undercut him, and that's why Lando beady boo boo ba. I'm like, who are you fooling right now? And it's just too much of the managing of the personalities.
Yeah, I thought that was
fascinating. I feel
fascinating.
Like, just choose a number one driver, but because they have so much going on off the track this season.
That's what I'm saying.
They have to, like, negotiate that between those two drivers, which is, and what did you think of the ending where Lando basically, like, pulled alongside Daniel? I feel
I
like
was
he was
like,
kind of saying,
like, battle?
He literally crossed the line within less than a second.
I know. I thought it was going to be one of those where, like, last minute Lando would overtake. I mean, I thought it was interesting. I didn't get a sense that Daniel was that much more fast than Lando
in order to hold that spot. No.
I wasn't quite understanding.
I think
why
it
they
was just
that.
At the beginning of the race, Daniel was held behind.
Yeah.
And so they returned the favor.
Yeah.
He wasn't much faster. And Lando's argument was that, you know, well, that was a different time. We stopped fighting because for the good of the race and for the good of the team. But at the end, we were racing for position and I should have been able to overtake.
Yeah.
Which also doesn't make sense. That's what I'm saying. You can never win with these scenarios. Just let the faster driver get ahead.
Yeah.
And I don't know who the faster driver was because we weren't able to see it. It was so weird.
Yeah.
But why do I feel like it was Lando?
That's how it seemed over radio. But then Daniel was like, if this is all the pace he's got, I've got more.
I know.
It's like, okay, Mr. Speed Racer, are you in a movie? Very theatrical
response. I think he understands the fire that's under his booty right now.
And I kind of, you know, I appreciated that. Like, do I not agree with it? I'm like, I don't really care. But it's like, good for you that you're having this, like, come to Jesus moment about, like, how fast you need to be in the car. Because that is your job. And, it would behoove you to be faster, probably.
Right, but he hasn't driven like this for almost a year and a half now.
He's had a few spots in the last few races, but
he's clearly, like, very affected mentally by what's going on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree. Okay, so one of the big headlines of this race, obviously, Sainz, DNF.
Yeah, and, like, what the hell? It's like, Sainz has finished, how many races has he actually finished? I'm actually curious. Like, we've had maybe seven.
Which,
and he's finished
eight races, dude.
I feel like he's finished three. Charles has now become the driver with the most poles and the fewest wins.
What's happening, Zaley? But it is what it is. It was a hydraulic issue for Sainz. He looks pretty disappointed on the way out, as one would. I will say there was a really slow pan into Mattia Binotto's face that made me laugh. Did you see that?
It always just looks kind the of same. Like, I'm over the panning to him. I'm like, can you react, bro?
Can you literally react? Bro, can you imagine being sitting on that whatever?
Yeah.
I would be pulling my hair out.
Apparently, there's a culture of fear at Ferrari.
Really?
Which is so interesting because he comes off as, I guess it's like the mafia, but like I do not sense that from him at all, that he would be administering that as a culture. No. But apparently, that's part of it, and people believe that that's why they have such a hard time making strategy calls, because of the blame culture. Like, nobody wants to be the person who pulled the trig and like brought a driver in or messed somebody up. But yeah, Mattia doesn't look like, I don't even know what he looks like. He's really hard to read.
He's really hard to read. I don't really get it. But it seems like they have a really good rapport, like the two drivers and him, which is nice. We've talked about it before. It feels like a dad-son relationship almost, which is really sweet. Okay, and then we also have...
Leclerc went out.
I was going to say, like, within a few laps. This is a second retirement in three races, which is just insane. We have Daniel Ricciardo and Pierre kind of going back and forth. This is like part of like where the pit strategy comes in, because they pit Lando, but they keep Daniel out, which I think is kind of interesting, because I feel like it's an experiment with like, they're like, we're going to pit Lando because we know that.
Right.
Yeah.
So
but Daniel
can be on different strategies.
Yeah. But Daniel can stay out and see what happens. Vettel, Hamilton, and Pierre are also kind of having this battle.
I loved Vettel today. And he kind of made a mistake and spun out. And then quick recovery.
That was crazy.
Volted right around.
And then we also have Zhao out. So another Ferrari engine kaput. Goodbye. Mm-hmm.
And where was Bottas at this point? Bottas
was
nowhere.
I didn't have any notes on him, dude. By the way, someone said, a commentator said that the vertical impact is up to 6 Gs of the porpoising, which I thought was crazy.
Yeah, 6 Gs is... That's painful.
Yeah. Then we have, by lap 33, K-Mag is out. Smoke is coming out of the gearbox. It's over for him. And then we have a big new round of, like, pitting, Verstappen pits, Perez pits. There's obviously a safety car, so that's what's inspiring all the pitting. Then we have Gasly on a one-stop strategy, which is just interesting. Where did he end up, let me say? Fifth.
Gasly has amazing drives. This man, wasn't it interesting to hear the comparison between the way that Yuki was overtaken, and he was like, yeah, here we go.
I know, and there comes, they were laughing.
Finally.
Great, yeah, great. Finally. And then we have Tsunoda overtaking Hamilton into fifth, which I just thought was an interesting sight. I actually read somewhere that Yuki Tsunoda was like, was talking about how the FIA is like unfair, and like how in Monaco he was like just penalized excessively. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, who does Tsunoda think he kind of gave me like this Hamilton persona of being like, this is not right. Like, I don't believe in what's happening here. It's like
his mentors are Pierre Gasly, whose mentor is Pierre Gasly, whose mentor is Lewis. So it doesn't surprise me that they're like all in the same vein
I found
of
that
personality.
To be so funny. I was gonna say, this is around the point where Yuki Tsunoda's rear wing flap falls off, and they have to start the car, and they duct tape the.
I don't even think he noticed.
He was confused. He was like, what's happening? No DRS? No DRS?
What is this? Is what he said in the video. He was like, what is this?
But then people were saying that the FIA just might not be happy with that because it can be dangerous.
No.
The can fall off and
the
fly.
The FIA, the person who was a race steward, ran down from his office and started. Did you hear about that?
No.
He stormed towards, as they were putting the tape on the freaking car. Someone from the FIA literally ran out and like started chasing after the car and trying to stop the team like physically. And they got him out right before the guy got to them. Right. It's just so
ghetto. So illegal. Like, it's like, how could that? I wonder if there's just going to be penalties coming from this. Like, this just can't be true. I just didn't really believe it when they brought the duct tape out.
Danger is that if the wing falls off, it's just flying in the wind and could hit someone.
Danger? Yeah.
Okay.
Right? That can go right past the halo.
Yeah. You're right. Anyway. I was just wondering if that was the only danger.
George this whole time is doing very well. Mm-hmm. I think he's like...
Yeah, I mean,
him and Perez are going back and forth a little bit, but I think he's able to like...
Yeah, Mercedes is never fighting anyone because in their dominant era, they were ahead, and now they're in no man's land, but at the same time in third, like solidly in third, but also ahead of the people behind.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting place to be.
Yeah, George is just, they basically just have to be faster than the people behind them, but also they don't really have to beat the people ahead of them.
Have to do that much.
Yeah, so George qualified well, and boom.
That's the sense that I also got even after the race where George was talking. He just seemed very calm and like cool and collected. And I was like, I was pretty impressed actually. Hamilton makes a comment about his seats going cold. Did you see that? He's like, why have my seats gone cold? And they're like, I don't know.
You didn't see that?
No. What?
He talked about his teens being cold.
Was he like...
I don't know what that means. Literally hallucinating
in the middle of the race?
No, this is lap 47. He's like, my seats have gone cold.
Oh, maybe it's code for something. Like, the magic isn't on. Oh,
that's interesting. And then towards the end of the race, we also have Stroll DNFing. He was getting high oscillation readings, whatever that means, before. And then,
oh, yeah, that was so random.
So random. The last thing that I really have here is Daniel and them telling him to keep Alonso under pressure. And it never really, like, amounts to anything, right?
I think they were hoping that he made a mistake. Like, if he got close enough and just kept nipping at his heels, which Alonso would make a mistake, but Alonso's not the type, bro.
It's so
Alonso's only gonna drive harder, only gonna get better.
That's what I was gonna say. It was actually so interesting to hear to just notice over the course of the season what names are like repeated the most. Alonso, Ocon, Gasly, like those people are kind of like the worms to me, and they're always in some kind of scuffle with always some kind of like aggressive, like, not aggressive, but they're just battling. Like, yeah, you can tell who's kind of cruising. Like, a Lando Norris is not usually, I feel like, battling around like mm-hmm. a Gasly or a Alonso. But yeah, those other two, like, are always in something. It's really interesting.
Midfield cars. It's like middle class or something.
It's like the middle class.
It's literally the middle class. Like, they're all clawing to get to upper class and, like, trying to stay out of the lower class. Whereas, like, lower class people are chilling because they're not getting up. There's no class mobility anymore in the world, and they know it. So lower class people are like, you know what?
I'm not trying.
Yeah, and rich people are good. They're keeping their comfortable wealth. But the middle class, the shrinking middle class, they've got. Yeah, they're fighting for their lives to get into the top private schools. They're paying people off. They're
true.
Like,
and it's interesting to imagine too, like, what a class of these midfield teams would be like at the top. Like, how would their driving styles change? How would their behaviors change? Like, with a car that is competing in one and two, even though I feel like this season, the differences between the cars are actually not as vast as last season.
No, they're not at all.
Okay. So we end up with Max in first, Sergio in second, George third, fourth Lewis, fifth Pierre.
Did anything strike you as interesting about Sergio's, about the orders to just let Max pass?
No fighting.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
no,
me neither.
He seemed faster this race. He actually did seem faster. And it seemed like afterwards, Sergio was like, I think it was the right decision, which I'm like, okay.
So he was like, there was no point in fighting.
Yeah.
But I just feel so bad for Sergio about the power in his tires.
I don't remember that.
They were just saying that because of how much power he put into his tires at the start of the race, he was never going to regain the amount of performance. Like, he didn't manage his tires that well. And I just feel bad for him because the Ferraris were going to DNF anyway.
Because
they both DNF'd. Yeah. So imagine if he had just driven, fell into line, not done too much at the start. He literally would have won this race.
That's an interesting scenario. Yeah. I mean, at this point, he can do a 50-50 where every other race he tries to do that, because one of the races they're probably going DNF, so just the odds. Okay, so that's the race. Do you have any other thoughts? Do you have, like, a radio message that you liked, Zaylee?
No thoughts, just vibes.
My takeaway of the day was, do the drivers get health insurance? That was my question. I was like, what is the health insurance-like situation with the drivers? I was just thinking about the porpoising. Like, whether or not
they have the most expensive elite... health insurance.
But when you're someone of that stature and you make that much money, is it provided to you by your job, or they, like, buy their own packages?
They buy their own health insurance.
I don't know. I mean, I want to know more about the
package.
They
buy their own health insurance, and they have the most expensive health insurance.
You're like, don't worry about them. They buy their own health insurance.
No, yeah. Red Bull buys insurance policies on their drivers separately. But they're buying their own health insurance, and they probably don't even need health insurance because they can probably pay outright for every single cost.
That's so true, out of pocket. Literally. What do you think is the most beneficial part of the driver to insure? The hands and the feet, probably. The hands and the feet. You know how J-Lo insures her ass?
Yeah, I do. And I don't understand how that works, because I don't think they're insuring body parts. But why does J-Lo insure her ass? Like, what is that?
She denied it. She said she denied it.
What, you don't believe in that denial?
Oh, no, because I feel like I heard of people insuring body parts before, but maybe it's just a rumor.
My race radio was, my back is killing me, man. Because it's just so classic Lewis putting on a show. It's like, it's so weird because I love Lewis so much. And I'm
I know,
talking
but
about
you'd be
so
gaslighting
bad.
The hell out of this man. You'd be like, you don't really mean that. Your back doesn't really hurt.
Because
damn.
I know him, and I know he'd be playing
I know what
games.
He's trying to say.
I can't take him serious, bro. And if you really knew him, you wouldn't take him serious.
Yeah, I think you would, yeah.
You'd be like, okay, Lewis. The only way you could, like, be around him all the time is when you're like, okay, Lewis.
No, you have to be like an Angela who's like, what'd you say, Lewis?
Well, those are the people that he's going to love the most.
Yeah.
Commentary of the day. I wanted to bring up this commentary from last year at Azerbaijan, mm-hmm. at the Azerbaijani Grand Prix in Baku, where Lewis left the magic on,
mm-hmm.
and was literally about to win the race and got ahead and then made a mistake that he said he had nightmares about. But he did something, clearly, some secret code. We'll never know what the magic meant. Or I guess they did figure out what the magic meant, but he basically went straight on, mm-hmm. didn't turn, and went from first to last. And it's crazy because if he won that race, we wouldn't even be talking about Abu Dhabi, but I digress.
Yep.
So many moments in that season. It's just like, I could never watch it again.
I loved it. I did love it, but it was really intense.
Yes,
it was
so intense. Like, I remember being like, ah!
I know.
Mark Webber was in the commentary room during that race, and he literally screamed the most high-pitched scream that was ever scrumped, and it's still such iconic commentary.
Scrumped.
Like, somebody who, you know, the main commentator was just like, and he goes full on! And he was literally in the commentary room like, ah! He literally did that. He did that.
Feel.
And it was literally how we all felt in that moment.
Feel.
I saw it on Twitter, and I was just like, probably because we were screaming, we didn't notice that they were screaming, but
I didn't notice
I've never heard a commentary do such a high-pitched scream. And I went and I found the video of him doing it, because I was like, I don't believe this. I feel like this is a deep fake. Like, I feel like the clip that I saw was someone inserting a scream.
Yeah.
And then I watched him do it, and he was literally like,
all right, bro, I'm finding this immediately after you.
No, it's so funny and strange. Because it was, like, clearly not... He forgot himself for a moment and was just in the moment of the sport.
Good racing makes you forget yourself. You heard it here, folks, guys.
But you're saying you haven't had a moment like
that
this season.
No, not yet. Maybe a little bit in the beginning where it felt like a little, like...
Well, when there's a lot to lose and there's not much on the line right now, there's not many... There's no one is steaming ahead with the championship and then also... surprising you and falling behind. That was neck and neck.
Every race.
It was like, if Lewis wins, he'll be ahead. If Max wins, he'll be ahead. If Lewis wins, he'll be ahead. Just back and forth. The
crashes, too, were interesting.
When summer break comes, we need to, like, do something on this, even though it's really hard to talk about. But the fact that the F1 gods aligned stuff as such so that the last race of the season, they were on the literal same amount of points... Like, how does that happen?
It was so good.
If you look at the point standings right now, everyone is like 15 points, 60 points. Like, everyone's in different random, all over the board. Two drivers, same amount of points, last race of the season, fight to the finish,
dramatic.
Fight to the death.
Drama.
Crazy.
Drama.
You talking about drive to survive?
Ooh.
You talking about driving for your life? Anyways.
Lip sync for your life. That's what it's giving. Drive for your life. The game is going to be very brief, but I did, you know, in the spirit of reminiscing, I went back and I pulled some quotes that we've both said. And I'll just have you guess whether you said it or whether I said it.
Oh, good. By the way, though, I think I'm going to get all of these.
I hope you don't. Okay. It'll be fun if you didn't, but you
okay,
might.
Okay, so maybe I'll pretend not to get some.
No, don't pretend. Just do it. I mean, I was trying to find some really deep cuts, but it's so hard because we're both so specific in terms of our voice. It's like...
Maybe I'll be surprised. I'm very excited for this. I'm really glad you did this. Let's go.
I was on the train like, let me try and find these things. Okay. If you're
I get extra points if I like can remember the context?
Sure. Okay. Some of them... The ones that are... No questions.
Go ahead.
If you're looking for something to talk about that makes you seem like you know something about this world, listen to this podcast and watch F1.
Zaylee said that.
You said that. It's true. Do you remember the context?
You know, it's also like in the beginning
because you edited this or a lot of these earlier ones. Yeah, you probably remember better who said what. Okay. Sometimes you just need to slide down the wall, and it has to be what it is. Sometimes you need to just slide down the wall, and that has to be what it is.
Okay, so it sounds like something I would say. Mm-hmm. And I'm laughing because this is so funny. Now that we're talking about Lewis pretending to not be able to get out the car, he definitely was like, the cameras are still on me. Let me slide down this wall. And that was just like a funny moment. I think it's you.
I said it, but that wasn't the context.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's the context?
The context was we were talking about the moment in Drive to Survive where Daniel was like, is there a fee for not doing press? And he slid down the wall. And I was like, and his friend was like, this makes you who you are, how you respond to problems. And I was like, sometimes you just got to slide down the wall and you don't need your friend in your ear talking about some. It makes you who you are. Shut up.
These drivers do such cinematic things all the freaking time.
They're so...
It's something you would see in like a TV show, but I never expected someone to see someone actually just slide down a wall so dejectedly.
Okay, this one. I didn't like this weekend that everyone was calling their car a woman. I don't know who started that.
I said that.
You said that. In the context was just... I forgot. You were saying that Lewis was like, she drives smooth. That's it.
It's like when you say the sentence, I can hear like the cadence and I just can like basically project how the cadence of how I would say that. Like I know I said, I don't like how, like I just, I know.
You hear that you would say that. That's good.
Yeah.
When he was on podium receiving his trophy, he winked and I almost fell out.
I mean, you're definitely more of a user of the phrase fell out.
You think? Between two of us?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't noticed that.
You're a big fell out kind of girl.
Go to hell.
And I know that this is Charles because Charles would wink.
Uh-huh.
And I know that you're a friend of Charles, so I'm going to go with you.
I said it.
Yeah. You like the way Charles looks. He's too pretty to me.
I love it. I love
He's
the way
too
he looks.
Gorgeous. He's unreal. I can't take it. He's a cartoon character. I don't want to have sex with him.
But, you know, I wish we should do this again and honestly take more time because some of it is... It's not obvious, but it's like I think we need more distance from the episodes.
Yeah.
But anyway, you said this. I shouldn't have said that, but you said this.
So we'll just read something else, or is this the last one?
That was the last one.
Okay.
And you said, well, Zaylee once said, sex for me has always been the entryway, I guess, which is funny.
I would have assumed you said that.
Really?
So.
Damn.
Yeah, I literally would have got that one wrong.
Okay.
Sex that for would, me has always been the entryway.
That does kind of sound like something I would
say.
Yeah,
it does.
It's kind of wry.
Yeah.
Okay, so this has been the Azerbaijan Grand Prix brought to you by Zaylee and I.
We're so happy to be back. We were silenced.
We were silenced. Quiet no longer.
We were not silent. We were silent.
Silent.
I promise you, we recorded an episode, and we will never do that to you again.
By the way, we have an idea about us writing fan fiction and reading it. So maybe we'll do that on the podcast. Yeah. That might be fun.
We might still do a fan fiction episode and it'll just be our writing.
Yeah, our writing, which we'll gladly make fun of and put everybody tear up.
Yeah,
it'll be really good. This is Zaylee's last episode here. So just give Zaylee, hit a round of applause for you, for your
Not confuse them. My last episode is literally in New York.
Oh yeah, her last episode.
Yes, so round of applause for me.
Woo! We're closing her out, ladies. We're sending her to LA. And she'll never come. Stop before you cry, bro.